Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah.
Kia ora to all our listeners. Did you know it's Comic Book September at Auckland Libraries? Read more comics, win a prize, win more prizes. In honor of Comic Book September, I'm here today with Jeremy Bishop, an ex-colleague at Auckland Libraries, my direct superior when I started, actually, but really more of a mentor, and obviously a good one, since you can see where I've gotten to. And since 2013, the man behind Arkham City Comics, billed as the home of the comically insane and the safe haven for comic book fans. Welcome, Mr. J.
Cool. Thank you very much, Karen. That's really a very lovely introduction, actually.
Oh, my pleasure. Just a small token of my appreciation for you finding time to come in today to talk about comics with us.
Cool.
So, we're talking long-term comics fandom here, right? Can you tell us a little bit about your journey from your earliest fandom to fanboy emeritus?
Pretty long-term fan. Starting off around the tender age of 8 or 9, reading Asterix and Tintin in the school library, and having a mother who was a librarian and a school teacher, it helped a fair bit. Also living right next door to a dairy, I could go across any time and start reading Wizards and Chips and Buster and start putting up my interest in comics from there. So, yeah.
This was in Auckland. In what neighborhood?
Avondale.
In Avondale.
So, Westie, born and bred sort of thing. Yeah. Now Southie out in Mangere, so yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, I can remember in our house, the comics, it was my parents were always wanted us to, they were hoping we'd be getting out the comic classics, you know, Romeo and Juliet in comics form. But I particularly remember Archie and, who was the guy with Archie and the two girls, Betty and Veronica?
Jughead.
Yeah,
Archie.
Yep.
Archie and Jughead, yeah.
This is why you are the comics book man and I am not.
Oh, I just hang around them far too much.
Yeah. So then you would have witnessed all that change into a genre and how it arrived. So when you were at the libraries, had comics, were they had just arrived into the library collections?
No, comics or graphic novels, trade paperbacks had always been in there in the forms of Asterix and Tintin, Biggles, Star Trek. There was usually a lot of that and Star Wars material because it was always around and it was seen as acceptable literature, where things like Superman and Batman, there wasn't really a lot out there published that was available to the libraries. And they didn't quite see it as literature as such. Going through the 80s and 90s, late 90s, it started coming through more when people were going, well, we want our kids to read. And people saying, well, if you get them reading anything, they are reading. The thing is, comics and trade paperbacks were still seen as lowbrow literature and sort of not acknowledged as such until American Library Association and places like that started acknowledging them, and creators like Neil Gaiman started winning full-on literature awards for his work for Sandman and things like that, then it started becoming noticed. And then they started developing the interest in it. And libraries were starting to put some of the funding that was going into fiction and non-fiction as well into that sort of material, and you started getting them come through a lot more.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. I recently found an old instruction book for librarians from Auckland City Libraries, and this was in the 80s. And a lot of people don't remember that even just regular recreational fiction was considered not something really worthy, and you had to pay. It was a pay, like a rental collection like we do now with the DVDs, rather than a free collection because it wasn't as worthy as if you were reading great literature. So,
Thankfully, that was before my time.
Yeah, but meaning in just in the sense that it wasn't just comics that were being discriminated against. It was romance. It was possibly thrillers. I'm not sure exactly where the boundary. It was before my time. I am older than you, Jeremy. It was before my time as well. But anyway, yes. So the collection started coming in, and the choice was given. It was called the graphic novels collection. Was how. Yeah. And is this part of that general more bigger marketing ploy to accustom people to the fact they could find something more than just a throwaway paperback comic of their youth?
I think it was just using a commercial term. that actually fit into libraries' grand scheme of things more, because graphic novels and trade paperbacks are actually the format and style. What you normally get on a dairy shelf or in even comic book stores nowadays, you get the monthly issues, which are the very thin ones that people remember. Trade paperbacks and graphic novels started coming more in the late 80s, and then through the 90s they just blossomed and everything was being reprinted, everything was coming out in that format, and libraries were going, okay, this looks a little bit bigger, you're getting complete stories, so we can use them. I do remember back, because I left libraries in 2002, I do remember them toying with the idea of calling them comics or graphic novels, and for a while there in the teen section, they were even toying with the idea of sophisticated picture books.
Mm,
and I put forward very boldly, I don't think any teens would ever want to read a sophisticated picture book. And that kind of quickly got dropped. So,
yeah. They still had, when I started, which was about 10 years later, books on etiquette, which I was always surprised, in their teen section, I couldn't come up with a better word than etiquette.
Yeah, there were some books that were never taken out in the teen section.
Yeah. But, I was living overseas at the time, and so graphic novels completely passed me by as a literary term. And when I arrived at Auckland Libraries, and I remember this, I was told, Auckland City Libraries as it was at the time, and I was told, and here's our graphic novels over here in this collection, and I assumed that it had to do with graphic, like sex and violence. I thought it was just regular print books. It actually meant nothing to me. That's why I'm always so curious about the adoption of this term, because...
Yeah, a lot of people still actually, when even in the comic shop nowadays, when I say this is the graphic novel area, they go, oh, no, I don't want my kids reading graphic novels. I say, well, okay, it's actually the term.
Yeah.
They're not necessary graphic, it's just the format that they're reprinted in.
Yeah.
Trade paperbacks, and as soon as you say trade paperbacks, they go, oh yeah, okay, no, that's acceptable.
Right.
That doesn't sound graphic at all. It's like, yeah, wait till you read things like Preacher or Watchmen, and okay, we'll stay with Superman, Batman for you, it's all good, yeah, cool.
So graphic as in graphic design rather than graphic
as in visual.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
When I was leaving libraries, one of the terms that came through, which I still use quite regularly, dealing with smaller school libraries and school teachers that come in looking for material for their kids in the classroom, comics were being referred to as visual literacy. And I actually thought that was brilliant, because that describes it all and it sounds highbrow for them.
Yeah, it certainly does.
So it worked quite well.
Yeah.
That's I still use that in store today. And you can see people sort of relax, because they're coming in. They're still a bit scared about comics, because now they've seen the movies or video games based on them, and they just think, right, they're all bloodthirsty, they're gory, they're violent, they're over the top. And it's like, well, that's the small part of the genre that's actually got out there.
Yeah, big emphasis on superheroes, isn't it? Yeah. The blockbuster sort of air to it. I remember somebody, I think it was Tim Kidd at Central City Library, that we were discussing the, it happened to me when I read, like I said, I was living in Italy. Well, I did read Corto Maltese, but Corto Maltese was just called a comic. Yeah. You know, it wasn't, it was graphic. I suppose they're probably part of the graphic novels collection.
They are now, yeah.
Yeah. And I wasn't really sure. Was this being the graphic novel? And I remember reading the first, work that really opened my eyes to the possibilities of the genre was Fun Home, was the Alison Bechdel, which I just, that was still one of my top books ever. And it was the first time I really captured what Tim had been describing to me as, when it's not a book and it's not pictures, it's actually something else altogether. So it's a way in which they combine to reinforce the storytelling, which is unique. And that's always seemed to me like, can't we just call that comics? Is that not just the sort of the lifeblood of comics? But
it's part of it. I mean, if you really want to get technical, it's all sequential art.
Oh, yeah.
There we go,
yeah.
To make it even sound more highbrow.
Yeah, which is similar. Speaking of highbrow, so for those people old-fashioned enough to still consider French and French culture to be a synonym for highbrow, you know, the bande dessinée, so it actually, the word for comics points out that it is a strip. It puts a lot of emphasis on the strip, which we've sort of lost once we lost the Sunday papers.
There's still a few comic strips around nowadays. It's more... because people can do that sort of material online, that's how a lot of creators who don't quite have the funding to print their material, they'll publish it online, and they actually do it as comic strips. So you're still getting the minimum three-panel sort of strips coming out that people might remember as, you know, Garfield or... Hogarth the Horrible and all those sort of ones, written, Amazing Spider-Man even. But, I mean, they still come out. They just come out online now.
Yeah.
And people actually produce a lot of material that way until they build up enough fan base or funding. And then quite a few of the American-based ones in particular will reprint them into the paper format.
Yeah.
Because print's not dead. They're still wanting to get that out there. Everyone keeps thinking, oh, nowadays with comics, it's all online. Everyone can read it online. I said, yeah. The thing is, you can't take that to the beach. You can't share that with a friend. It's still the printed material. So we've found that actually material online actually helps our business because people read it and actually enjoy it, and then they'll come in and buy the physical copy. And you just see the interest in their face, that oh, I've got this. This is mine now. It's not online. It can't. The battery can't run flat.
Yeah.
No one can steal my computer, and suddenly my comic collection's gone because I've got the physical book here. And they start sharing it with friends, and then they have to come back. And I've had one customer in a two-month period buy six copies of the same book because his friends kept borrowing his one.
Yeah, well,
and never returned it.
It's something that's totally outside of that online dimension that we're all in so much of the day.
Mm.
And so you can really see why it has that ownership thing of it, because it's actually something you've carved out.
It's also escapism. I mean, it's away from the real world. It's away from the computer. You can't be reading it online and suddenly a messenger will pop up or something will catch your eye and an ad will pop in. It's like you actually get to unplug from the computer and actually go sit down and read a book. As long, even if it is a comic, you're reading a book away from a computer, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and if you happen to spill a little something on it, becomes part of the patina and remains a beloved item.
It becomes a variant.
It stays
with you forever then.
Yeah. So you're speaking of, you know, people coming in and wanting to buy the collections of the comics they've seen online takes us on to another topic that I wanted to ask you about, which is actually your career as comic book man in Auckland. So how did you get into that? So we met in libraries and then...
Well, actually, well before even getting into libraries, I was starting to become a comic book collector and started going to the very early days of the Armageddon Pop Culture Expo, which, you know, started off in pretty much a room full of fanboys and retailers selling material. And you could go in there, and every table you could go to, you could literally buy something from because they were just selling. They weren't showcasing, they weren't showing off. They were just going, here's what we've got to sell, buy it if you want. And it was cool. So I've been a collector as such. Whoa, what are we now? 2018. So coming up to 30-odd years where I was going through and actually finding comics I had to read the next one for and had to get. I had to have it.
Yeah. You had a list.
I had lists.
Yeah.
I remember
when we got your goodbye gift from the library that we took your list of your next 20 that you wanted purchased or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it went from there. And with that, I started becoming friends with people running comic stores, and one guy in particular was an assistant out at a store in New Lynn called Comic Crazy, and that guy's name was Tony Gibson. And we became good friends, and he started recommending things, and I was talking about stuff, and we started expanding the idea into libraries for comics to actually be a little bit more forward. And then when I was working at Onehunga Library, I was walking around the lower end of Onehunga and just at lunchtime, and then suddenly I... Tony, what are you doing in the store? Oh, this is where I'm going to open up my comic shop. All right, really?
Ding, ding.
Right here. All right, cool. I want to be a customer. What do you want to get? I don't care. I want to be your customer right now. He didn't even open. I think he just signed the lease and was in there designing out where to put everything. So I was subholder number two of Gotham Comics back in 1997. And pretty much from then, I was that annoying customer that would hang out at lunchtimes from work or after work, I'd go up and see how he's going. Until the point where I was there so much and I got to know him that he goes, can you mind the shop for an hour? I just need to go to the bank. And I just went, I suddenly have the power of a comic store. I'm in charge. I think two people came in an hour and we just talked comics. And I was like, okay, I'm hooked. So I started doing 5 days a week in the libraries, then working a full day in the comic shop. And it just kept going and going. Even when I left Auckland Libraries to go to Waitakere, I was still part of the comic store a fair bit, helping out at events and just being in the store a fair bit. Then, unfortunately, he passed away late 2001, and the store had a bit of trouble. And by that time, I was working at Waitakere Libraries in the children's and teens department and was promoting comics as often as possible. And I saw that the comic store that started me on the way was starting to have a little breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
So I offered up and said, hey, look, I want to come work full-time. I'll run the front. The other guy working with me, we can do an online store. We can really get it going. And I left libraries and started in comic stores in 2002 and kind of have been doing that ever since via originally as Gotham Comics for 10 years and then as the be-all and end-all of Arkham City Comics in Royal Oak now for the last 5.5 years. And I've been corrupting minds ever since.
Never looks back.
Yeah, never looks
bold,
back.
A bold move. It sounded, I was chuckling to myself when you said, you know, and he said, watch the store for a day. And I was thinking of a superhero cloak being handed to you. It was like the magic powers.
It was more the evil retail side of it that was handed over. It was the power of the store. It's like, yes. And even nowadays, I still joke about being the evil retailer. Mm-hmm. And people go, but you're not really evil. I said, yes, but how often do you come to the comic store now to get stuff?
Yeah.
And they go, well, yeah, okay, you make us come in literally weekly to get stuff. And I went, yeah. And I'll recommend stuff. And they're looking at me and they're just going, you're taking my money. I said, yeah, but I'm giving you enjoyment and escapism of the world. Oh, yeah, okay, fair enough. Cool, thank you. And then I just, the evil retailer kind of is a persona. It's kind of grown over the years and people are joked with and understand it now and have a bit of fun with it, but it all started just from the interest and love of comics. Then it's kind of gone on to the point where I want to share that with everyone, and seems to be working. So
yeah, it seems like sort of like you held true to the experience, like you said, that you had when you went into comic book stores, and now you offer that same opportunity for people to come and hang out, leaf through the comics. You probably don't start crying if they haven't purchased something within a certain...
If they've been there for 2 hours doing that, I kind of glare a little and then go, what are you reading? Let's share.
Yeah, but it could be there, could be exactly that. It could be a conversation or a conversation starter. Yeah. So what kinds of people do you get? All ages, all types. Tell me a little bit about the gender thing. And, you know, when you say Armageddon was, you know, fanboys, was a room with fanboys. So is there still a gender gap here, or are we...
Nowadays, not. It's very equal across the board.
Good to hear.
We encourage anyone and everyone in. Doesn't matter whether they've been a long-term fan, whether they've been introduced to it by a parent or an uncle or auntie or grandparents. Anyone, everyone comes in. We've got very knowledgeable three-year-olds who will come in and pretty much name the entire Marvel Universe. I still have one of the best recollections of one of our free comic book day events. We had a Hulk princess. She was three. She really liked the Hulk, but she wanted to wear a tutu. 3-year-old turned up, Hulk mask, Hulk gloves, bright green tutu, and the most blood-curdling Hulk smash scream we've ever heard. And she's, what, now about 8. And we still remind her, and she goes, yeah, well, I'm bringing my cousins in to see my store. She owns my shop. Yeah. I don't. She does. So.
The ultimate accolade is when it's my shop for your customers.
Exactly. And nowadays, it's anyone and everyone. We get people who grew up with comics coming back to them using the excuse of, oh, I've got to get the next generation involved in it, and they need to see what I've missed it, or getting what I think they're missing out on with the digital age being around so much. They don't have the pleasure of going into a bookstore or a comic store and just sitting down and reading and then listening to other fans talk about stuff and just discussing anything and everything around it, because they can just sit on their electronic device at home in a dark room and just read comics or look at stuff. But it's more than that. It's the community. It's getting the interest and the passion from other people who might be a little bit more knowledgeable in one area than another, and they're sharing the information, and it just grows. So nowadays, it's anyone and everyone, because you've also got all the fans who have seen comics for the first time via the movies. And I refer to our store as a grassroots business with multi-billion-dollar companies advertising for us. I call them Warner and Time Warner, DC, and Disney.
So these are these trailers that they put out in theaters for you.
All the movies they put out pretty much push people into comic stores because they start researching them.
Yeah.
And because there's only a few comic stores in the country, we usually pop up near the top, and then they come visit us and chatting. Usually that's the first slippery slope down, and then that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very inclusive community, as you say, from my experience. It's not about you have to be cool in certain codes. There's not a lot of...
In New Zealand, it's a little bit more inclusive because we are such a small community here. There are still segments worldwide who are, oh, you're a girl. You don't read comics. Are you getting into this because your boyfriend's told? And it's like, they're the sort of ones that you, online people hear a lot about because they're so negative and they're so clicky and they're so, you know, it's just us. It's not for you. It's for us. Where we're finding that's the worst thing that they could do to the comic industry and community is because everyone comes into it at a different point and they see a different thing. And if you suddenly get told, no, you can't do that, you never come back. And
that's
it's like that's the way to kill off the community and the industry, is by excluding the next generation or the next customers. So what we do at Arkham, at least, is we usually I have a chalkboard up saying Arkham is open to all level of fans, and people just come in. What do you mean all levels? I say, well, how much of a fan of comics are you? And I say, oh, I've just watched the Thor movie. Perfect, you're a fan. Come on in.
Yeah.
And then you'll get ones who have been reading for four decades.
Yeah.
Who know everything.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, besides gender, no age also.
No
age discrimination.
No.
Yeah. The white ponytail's good, the three-year-old and the tutu's
we
good.
We mock everyone equally.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's also so many different kinds in terms of these different customer characteristics, mm-hmm. age, genre, gender, not genre, it's a little bit librarian mistake there. There's also that there are so many different kinds of comics. So what are some of your favorites in...
Well, now, I mean, like most comic fans, you start off with the superheroes and you're either Marvel or DC to begin with, and then you start wanting to expand and you're wanting to look at what else is out there. And, I mean, most people start off with, you know, any of the big ones, so Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, X-Men, Fantastic Four, all those sort of characters. They're the big, well-known ones everyone knows, or Phantom or Judge Dredd, depending on where you come from in the world. But then once you start reading those for a while, you kind of get, yeah, I kind of know these stories. What else is out there? And they start looking out. The superhero genre is still the biggest genre in the comic realm.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, though, there are a lot more supernatural stories coming through, crime, thriller, which is what there was a lot of in the 50s. There's actually a company called EC Comics who actually pretty much did horror, sci-fi, crime and all that, to the point where the American government kind of saw them as a, not quite gateway drug as such, but they were leading to the delinquency of the youth of America, and actually had a congressional meeting about it, and it created the comic book code where they pretty much censored comics. But nowadays there's no censoring because it's online and comic stores can sell whatever they, within reason, anything mm-hmm. they want, without having to, you know, adhere to a ruling that newspaper stands had to. So you get horror, you get romance, you get teen angst, you get Bible stories with a twist, and they're all coming through. And it just depends on who's a few memoirs.
I'm a big fan of comic memoirs.
A fair bit of nonfiction material is coming through. Joe Sacco does a lot of stuff on war, Palestine and Safe Area Groznia. Things like Mouse, which Art Spiegelman was doing pretty much the retelling of, I think it was his dad's journey through the Jewish Holocaust.
Yeah.
Those sort of things come through. And nowadays you find a lot of the creators who've been working for the big guys, Marvel and DC, for so long, want to tell their own story, and they want to tell stories where they're not constrained by what you can tell about the X-Men or about Superman or Batman, and they start going to smaller publishers like Image Comics and Aftershock, and they start being able to tell their own story with no limits, and fans will follow the creators around, and they're just going, well, this is really great stuff. You can really see this creator just unleashed. And then when they reread some of the older stuff, what I've personally found is you can see how they've been limited. But, I mean, nowadays they don't have to just do superheroes. So you get humor, you get, anything and everything that you
angst.
Can think
angst. I like to use the word angst. That's a big one.
That's in there in a fair bit.
Yeah. As it should be.
But I mean, it's like whatever you can find in the library in the fiction area, you can pretty much find something based on those sort of genres in comic collections nowadays as well.
Yes, well, of course, fiction just means stories. We still get people, and I want to put it out there for people who feel intimidated when they come into libraries. What is this fiction, nonfiction? Fiction is just stories. So, and I really also liked what you reminded me of was how sometimes people will say, as a representative of Auckland libraries, what is the book that everybody should be reading? And I always make the point that reading is an individual journey, no matter what format or what genre you're reading in. It's really about following, trying something, and then what that inspires you to move on to, and then so on, and just it's a journey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was actually one thing I took away from working in libraries was the questioning of the customer as they come in. Majority of the customers still don't know exactly what they're wanting unless they're looking for that one particular issue. They come in, they're going, I want to read something. I say, cool, what are you into? And then you start finding out what they're about. And then with being able to, as I refer to it, I am learning my product. Most of my customers refer to me as, you're just sitting there reading comics. I said, yes, that's how I get to learn my product. So I get to learn it and know it. And with that, when we start questioning people on what they're into, what they like, does this sort of sound familiar? Does this sound good to you? Does that sound good to you? Then we start being able to find out something for them to have a look at. And because with comics being visual, you can actually literally flick through and see the story. And if it's something that grabs you, you go for it. Where with a novel, sometimes you have to read a page or two to hopefully get hooked. Where with comics, you visually see the hook. And there's actually been some comics I've been able to sell just off like one or two images. And people go, okay, I want to know how they got to that. And what happened after that? I need to see what happens. And when they start saying they need to see this or they need to read that, it's an easy sale.
Yeah, that is such a good point about the visual capture. But I laughed when you said about reading a page from the novel because my personal technique is I always read the ending. I read the last page because I feel like novels, at the beginning, you don't really know where the author's going with the mood. Yeah. They can sort of lure you in, but then it switches and it becomes sillier than you thought or more serious.
It's a little easier than doing the old trick of just holding a novel in your hand and just let it fall open naturally to the most read page, which most librarians know that's usually the most provocative one.
Watch me come back off to the library. I did it on my next day on the job. No, I find that the ending is where the author really reveals all the cards in their hand. Yeah. So if I like the ending, then I want to go back and read and see how it got there.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah. But that's a wonderful thing about the visual that is so true, about the visual capture into that can speak to someone right away. And it's one of the same reasons why there's so much emphasis on when we talk about banned books is that comic books often come up for a challenge because of this fact that the visual is always more disturbing to people, but can also be more rewarding.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when I remember people challenging some of the books, some of the comics in the libraries, it's like, this is tame compared to a John Grisham or a Louis L'Amour even, and all those sort of ones. It's just because it's visually there. You can see it straight away. You don't need to read it. You don't need to interpret it. You just see it. So, yeah.
So in that same way, it speaks to you directly. You've got time now to go down during Comic Book September and check out all of our collections of comic books after you've had a little bit of this advice and insight from Jeremy Bishop, Mr. J, the warden.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to distributing some great prizes at the end of the month. Thanks for listening, and ka kite anō. Thank you, Jeremy.
Cool. You're welcome.
Brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day, every day.